Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayeshev. This week, also, I'm pleased to announce that we have a new series. It's called The Parsha Discussion. It's a weekly series by faculty member Alex Israel designed to stimulate discussion around your Shabbat table, especially with teenagers. It's a PDF to download, print out, and bring to your Shabbat table. You can download it from Elmad, which is the Pardes electronic learning site. That's Elmad, E-L-M-A-D, .pardes.org.il. So please check it out and let us know what you think. This week, Vayeshev with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayeshev. I would like to begin with the opening words of the second verse of our parsha, chapter 37, verse 2. Ele toldot Yaakov Yosef, which literally translated means, these are the progeny of Yaakov, Yosef, or these are the life events of Yaakov, Yosef. Either translation presents a certain difficulty. If toldot means the progeny, why do we only mention Joseph? We should give a listing of all of Jacob's children. If toldot means the life events of Jacob, in fact, the whole parsha, and I would even add all the other parshiot, from this point on until the end of the book of Bereishit, are actually telling me the life story of Jacob's children and not Jacob. Rashi quotes a rabbinic comment, which is very telling, which says, Ele toldot Yaakov Yosef, whatever happened to Jacob, happened to Joseph. And then he goes on to say, this one was hated by his brother, this one was hated by his brothers. This one's brother sought to kill him, this one's brothers attempted to kill him. So that, according to this explanation, we can actually say that if you want to see the life story of Jacob, look at the life story of Joseph. If you want to know who was essentially Jacob's progeny, it is Joseph. There are many parallels between the life of Jacob and the life of Joseph. And today what I would like to examine is one similarity, which is that both of them are dreamers. Similar, but yet very different, and the differences have very significant ramifications. So let's begin with Jacob. Jacob has two dreams in the parsha, which tells me really his life story, Parshat Vayetze. In the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, we find Jacob at the beginning of his journey to go to the land of Haran to find a wife, which is the official reason for going. The unofficial reason is that Jacob is running away from his brother, who wants to kill him. As we have noted in a previous podcast, Jacob is very, very fearful. He's afraid that his brother will perhaps kill him. He is afraid to be now going to an unknown world, which he may actually see as being very hostile, which in fact turns out to be very, very unwelcoming. And as he begins his journey, he has a dream, a very famous dream, of a ladder, angels going up and down, and God standing at the top of the ladder. What is the message which God gives Jacob? There are two messages. The first one, you are the continuity of the line of Abraham. You will be the one who will inherit this land. You will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. Through you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. God validates what Isaac had said to him at the end of Parshat Toldot, when Isaac tells him to go and seek out a wife, he says, may God give you the blessing of Abraham. So that Jacob is clearly told by God in his dream what his destiny is. The second part of the dream is that God says to him, despite the fact that you are leaving the land of Israel, I will be with you. I will never abandon you. I will make sure that you will come back here to ultimately actualize your destiny. What is Jacob's reaction to his dream? He wakes up. He is clearly overwhelmed. He says how awesome this place is. This is the house of God. This is the gate to heaven. When he gets up in the morning, he takes a vow. Interestingly, in the vow he says, if God will in fact be with me and protect me and give me bread to eat and a garment to wear and bring me back here, I will make this place a house of God. Jacob has a dream. God communicates with him in his dream. And yet Jacob somehow, his response on the one hand is how awesome it is that God is speaking to me. But on the other hand, there's a certain element of ambivalence. In the beginning of chapter 29, Jacob has to lift up his feet to go to where he's going. It's not clear whether that means that Jacob is gung-ho or whether it's a bit of an effort for him to do this. At the end of Parshat Vayetse, after Jacob has been by Laban, after he has created a family, 11 sons, after he has amassed a small fortune, all of a sudden, in the beginning of chapter 31, Jacob hears the sons of Laban speaking and saying, Jacob has taken all that is our father's. Jacob looks at Laban and sees he's not exactly acting the same way towards him. And then God appears to Jacob and says to him, go back. The time has come. Interestingly, Jacob does not immediately execute the word of God. Before he goes back, he has a rendezvous in the field with Rachel and Leah, and he tells them what God has said. But he also, in telling them that, he tells them about a dream which he had, that while he was taking care of his father-in-law's sheep and devised this whole plan of how to be able to, as I said, amass his fortune, he has this dream where he sees all these spotted sheep going around and where an angel appears to him and says, I know all that Laban is doing to you, and I won't let him get away with it. Interestingly, we're not told of that dream in real time. We're only told of that dream when Jacob is recounting it to Rachel and Leah. Interestingly, in the midst of retelling that dream, he also tells him what God had said about going back to his birthplace. Jacob is waiting to hear the response of his wives. Jacob will only act when he has their okay. What do we see about Jacob? Jacob has dreams where God appears to him, where God speaks to him, where an angel speaks to him, where it is very clear that his dream is a communication from God. And what is his response? As I mentioned earlier, there seems to be a certain ambivalence. We don't get the sense that when God appears to him, that immediately Jacob acts. There's a hesitation. There's a certain reluctance. I would even say there's a certain fear. In another podcast, I mentioned that for Jacob, dreams are very important. Because in a certain way, that's what enables him to cope and perhaps to ultimately come to terms with very difficult realities. The dreams are, in fact, a way of building up his confidence. But what I would like to emphasize now is that in many ways, Jacob is very reactive rather than proactive in relationship to his dreams. It's as if Jacob is always waiting for God to give him the push to go and do something, and is not necessarily proactive in actualizing his dreams. But I would like to now add a very important qualification. I mentioned that the first dream which Jacob has is that God said, this land will be yours. And in fact, when Jacob comes back to the land of Israel, Jacob actually does do something which is quite proactive. Jacob is the first one to purchase land in Israel for the purpose of living there. Excuse me. And this is last week's parsha, chapter 33, verse 18, where it says that Jacob comes to the city of Shechem, and then in verse 19, it says he purchases a certain plot of land where he pitches his tent, and he establishes an altar and calls it the God of Israel, which means that although Jacob initially is not acting on his dreams, later on, Jacob does do that. Jacob purchases land. Jacob does build an altar. Jacob does call out in the name of God. And this leads me to the opening verse of our parsha, when it says, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Kanaan. Vayeshev means, and Jacob is settling in the land where his fathers sojourned. Which means, and Rashi quotes a midrash which says, that Jacob actually sought to now settle down. And what I would add is that perhaps Jacob is now trying to be even more proactive to finally actualize the destiny that was given to him. Where Jacob realizes that whereas his father Yitzchak and Avraham were simply dwellers in the land, did not actually own any land of their own, that he now wants to settle down to finally become a permanent resident of the land. So that in the opening verse of our parsha, Jacob is actually trying to make his dream into a reality, to finally actualize his destiny. But in fact, Jacob's destiny is not to settle down in the land of Israel. And now I would like to go and examine Jacob's son Joseph. Dreams are a central part of Joseph's life, and they come in pairs. In the beginning of our parsha, Joseph has two dreams. At the end of the parsha, we have two dreams of the butler and the baker, which Joseph is involved in. And in the beginning of next week's parsha, Pharaoh has two dreams, which Joseph is asked to interpret. And what I would like to now show is how the interpretation of Pharaoh's two dreams closes the circle and sets the stage for the actualization of Joseph's dreams. Let me begin by saying the most significant difference between Joseph's dreams and Jacob's dreams is that God does not appear in Joseph's dreams, in any of the dreams. And what is fascinating is how Joseph connects dreams with God, sees dreams as being communications from God. And now I would like to add, not only are they communication from God, but perhaps even giving the person who has them a mandate to act. So let's begin with the opening of our parsha. It is very important to note that Joseph's dreams happen in the aftermath of chapter 37, verse 3. When Jacob, although he is called Israel, it says, loved Joseph, and he makes for him a multicolored tunic. Jacob basically gives Joseph a gift. He gives him a special tunic. That gift arouses the enmity of the brothers, who then can no longer talk to Joseph. What is it about the tunic which so angers and antagonizes the brothers? And the answer is very simple. The tunic is not just a gift. It is not just a nice pair, a nice article of clothing. The tunic is a symbol. It is a symbol of status, of position. By giving Joseph the tunic, Jacob is conferring upon him a position of leadership, in effect saying, perhaps that Joseph will be the continuity. One might even add, this might give us a certain sense of deja vu, and might even be a deja vu which is a corrective. Namely, in the beginning of Parshat Toldot, Jacob bought the birthright from Esav. One might say extorted the birthright in return for a bowl of soup, nizid adashim, lentil soup. In that story, Jacob had to take a certain initiative to arrogate to himself that position of leadership, that birthright. Here Jacob is now giving that to Joseph. And in response to what Jacob did, Joseph has a dream. In fact, Joseph has two dreams. It's very clear that the meaning of Joseph's two dreams is that he will be the leader. The sheaves of the brothers bowing down to his sheaves, his sheaf. The sun and the moon and 11 stars bowing down to him are very clearly allusions that he will be the brother. He will be the leader, excuse me. What does Joseph do? Not only does he have a dream, he tells the brothers his dream. Twice he does it. Why? In a previous podcast, I made a point of saying, well, this shows us the immaturity of Joseph, because Joseph should have clearly realized that telling the brothers his dreams would be a source of antagonism. So what's the point of doing it? Today I would like to adopt a slightly different tack. Joseph does it because he feels it's not enough to have a dream, but you need to be proactive. It's not enough for him to see himself as being the leader. He wants to get that message across to the brothers. He wants them to acknowledge that. Clearly, when we read the continuation of the story, that boomerangs. And we would say, with hindsight, that if Joseph wanted to get them to accept his leadership, he perhaps was doing it in a very heavy-handed way, which certainly was not going to achieve his goal. And hence, Joseph needs to go through what we would call a growth curve. He needs to learn how to go about actualizing dreams. When we look at the end of the parsha, we're no longer talking about his dreams, but about the dreams of the butler and the baker. And perhaps I should add, the butler and the baker are in jail. One could easily imagine, this is chapter 40, that they are dreaming, one might say even fantasizing, of one day going back to their previous roles. And when they have their dreams and come to Joseph and ask him to interpret what is the meaning of these dreams. Interestingly, what Joseph says to them, this is chapter 40, verse 8. Joseph says, behold, to God are the solutions, are the answers to dreams. Tell me your dream. Which means a very important thing has happened here. Joseph is in effect saying to them that there is a connection somehow between your dream and God. God can help you interpret the dream. By implication, he's saying, I have an in with God. And as we know, Joseph eventually says to the butler, you will be reinstated. To the baker, he says, you will be hung in 3 days when it's Pharaoh's birthday. But I want to come back. How do these dreams impact on Joseph? Joseph's response is once again, to try to be proactive in light of a dream. One could say that maybe he's being an opportunist. And this is in chapter 40, at the very end of the parsha. After he has solved the dream of the butler, Joseph says to him, chapter 40, verse 14, "When you are reinstated, remember me. When it is good to you, then do an act of kindness to me. Remind me, remember me to Pharaoh. Get me out of here, because I was stolen from the land of the Hebrews, and here I didn't do anything, that I was placed in this pit." Which means that Joseph sees dreams as an opportunity to be seized. He's very proactive. Unfortunately, this too boomeranged, as it says in the last verse of the parsha, that not only did the butler not remember him, but he forgot him. Which leads us to the beginning of next week's parsha. Pharaoh has two dreams, one which involves seven good cows, seven bad cows, another that involves seven good sheaves, seven bad sheaves. And then all of a sudden, the butler remembers how Joseph had solved his dreams and mentions to Pharaoh, "I have somebody who can solve your dream." And now we see Joseph's response when Joseph is brought before Pharaoh, which then all of a sudden puts in perspective Joseph's relationship to dreams, and that is, Joseph says to Pharaoh, "Your two dreams are really one dream." And as we know, the seven bad cows, the seven bad sheaves are indicative of famine, and the other ones are indicative of a period of plenty. But the point which is important for us is, it's not just that the solution to dreams are with God, but as it says in chapter 41, verse 28, what God is about to do, he has shown Pharaoh. The source of dreams is from God. Dreams are a minor form of prophecy. Even if God does not appear in the dream, God is somehow behind the scenes, empowering us with the dream. Why is the dream repeated in verse 32, Joseph says? To tell you that this matter is established from God, and that this is about to be imminent. And then you come to verse 33, where Joseph says, "And now, let Pharaoh see to it, to find a man who is wise and has understanding, and to appoint him upon the land of Egypt." And then Joseph goes on to give a whole proposal. What does this have to do with the interpretation of the dream? Well, on the one hand, one could say Joseph clearly is once again being an opportunist. Because clearly the person who he is hinting at, right, who is wise, who should now be appointed to this position of leadership, is him. But I would like to say that it's more than just being an opportunist. It has to do with Joseph's whole understanding of dreams. If dreams, in fact, are minor prophecies, are forms of communication from God, the purpose of the dream is to get us to act. And therefore, what Joseph is saying, it's not enough that you know what will be. There will be 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. You need to be proactive. You need to realize that the point of having that dream is to act upon it. And hence, you need to find somebody who is smart, who is wise, who will be in charge of now anticipating the famine which is about to come, storing up food during the years of plenty. When Joseph presents this plan, this is Joseph's proactive way of dealing with the dream. I would add, this is how I turn that dream into a reality. Interestingly, Pharaoh is very much taken by Joseph's interpretation of the dream, and what I would say by his proactive stance, and at that point appoints him to be second to Pharaoh. At that moment, Joseph then begins the process of actualizing his own dreams, of becoming a leader. Interestingly, he initially becomes the leader of Egypt. That extends to now becoming a very powerful overseer for all of the surrounding areas, one might say for the world at large. And all of that ultimately sets the stage for him actualizing his leadership in the family. So that one might say the destiny which Jacob had conferred upon Joseph by giving him the coat, which then became translated into dreams, ultimately becomes a reality. I would just add as a postscript, it is very interesting that Joseph brings his family eventually down to Egypt. I would even say eventually settles his family in Egypt. But it is Jacob who, when he dies, insists on being buried in the land of Israel to remind his children of Jacob's dream, which is that ultimately the destiny of the Jewish people is to be actualized in the land of Israel. That ultimately, the same God who brought Jacob back to the land of Israel will bring his children back to the land of Israel after being enslaved and afflicted for a considerable period of time in the land of Egypt. So what I would like to end with is, dreams are very important for people to have. Dreams chart out our destiny. It's not enough to have dreams, but people need to be proactive. If we have dreams, we have to then know how to act to actualize those dreams. And sometimes we also need to know how our dreams interact with those of others. So that the last thing which I'll say is, by Joseph actualizing his dreams, it then leads to Jacob fully actualizing his dreams. And the very last thing which we find in the book of Bereishit is where Joseph says to his brothers, I am about to die. At some point in the future, God will remember you, bring you back to the land of Israel. Make sure to take me with you to bury me in the land of Israel. Which means that Joseph very much sees how all of his dreams ultimately need to be connected to the dreams of his father, and ultimately are a stepping stone to the dreams of his father, so that the whole purpose of his leadership is to ultimately actualize the dreams of his father, to not only provide for the Jewish people, but to eventually empower them to come back to the land of Israel. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.